This, along with every episode of According to Flint, brought to you by Pendleton Whiskey. For more than a century, the Pendleton Roundup has defined what it means to be a cowboy. It also gave life to something equally renowned, a whiskey that captures that unique spirit in every bottle. A whiskey made with the finest northern grains and cut with Mount Hood Glacier water. A whiskey that celebrates the cowboy in all of us. That is Pendleton Whiskey. And that's true Western tradition. Pendleton Distillers, Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Please drink responsibly. This episode brought to you by Element, L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix formulated for anyone on a mission to restore health through hydration. It's perfect for athletes, folks who are fasting, or anyone following keto, low-carb, whole food, or paleo diets. Each stick pack delivers a dose of electrolytes free of sugar, artificial colors, or those other dodgy ingredients you see in other sports drinks. Also, receive a free Element sample pack with any order. Just use drinkelement.com/Flint. That's L-M-N-T. drinkelement.com/Flint for a free sample pack with any order of Element. And remember, stay salty. Since 1973, the art of engraving brings to life the artistry that Montana Silversmiths is known for and is fueled by a passion for the Western lifestyle. Montana Silversmiths' buckles and jewelry are more than accessories. They are stories. Stories of moments and memories shared through the giving, receiving, and earning of Montana Silversmiths' buckles and jewelry. Celebrate what matters with Montana Silversmiths. Well, welcome to episode 89 of According to Flint, the podcast, and happy to welcome, man, I wish I could remember the last time we ran into each other. I can't, but a guy that through my career, we not just crossed paths, but worked together, became good friends. He is the 1998 Wrangler Bullfight World Champion in professional rodeo. 98, Jerry Norton.
Whew. How's it going? How you been?
It's good. 98. It seems like yesterday, yet seems a world away. And I had to ask you, because I was in Vegas at the NFR when you won your world title. It was my first one. So I was into everything going on. Quite a year.
You were slack jawed and big eyed, just taking it in.
Young and good looking.
You know? We both were. I don't know what happened. Train wreck.
And I said, when you told me, I had asked you here last week, what year was that, 98? And the first thing I said was, oh, back when we got the big locker room, when the Wrangler bullfights were still going, there was a big locker room. Okay, so the locker room, not just a big room. It needed to be a big room with the personalities, the egos, the... Talk about, there was some names in the bullfight and working the rodeo there.
Absolutely. I think that year, was it Frank Newsom was in the bullfight, or was it Frank and Joe were working the rodeo? Working the rodeo. You were in the barrel. Looking around, I have a picture of the locker room from, it might be that year, but there was Greg Rumor, as salty as they come, there's Rob Smits. Lloyd Ketchum, Mike Matt. I'm not sure if Mike Johnson was there that year, but and then I forget who was the alternate.
Was Frank also in the bullfight though? I think he was. Yeah,
yes, he was. And I want to share a pretty cool story about that at some point about Frank and in the bullfight and us competing that year to win the world.
Yeah. So no, please do, because Frank was one of those few. There's been a couple guys that were in the bullfight and worked the rodeo at the same time. I know Lloyd Ketchum had done that in the past. Yes. But
Lee Smits did, Rob Smits.
Yeah. Frank was legendary. I mean, that guy, he did some stuff that in those bullfights.
I tell you what, Frank was as catty as I've ever seen. And the very first time I saw him was in Claremore, Oklahoma. Oh my goodness. It was like 2, 3, 4 years before that. Frank hadn't had his card yet, his PRCA card. And Rex Dunn had the fighting bulls, a bunch of Mexican bulls out that night. And I was fortunate. I won the round. Clem McSpadden was announcing. And I can still remember him. Rex Dunn had the bulls, so Rex and Frank were pretty tight. And Rex had this Mexican that he had to lop the horns off of because they got infected or something. But so it was a muley Mexican, a young, a hot Mexican. It's the kind of make everybody drool. If you've ever fought bulls, a hot hornless Mexican, man, what you can do to play. So here Frank is, doesn't have his card, had never heard of the kid, and he's out there just dancing with this bull, stepping around, reversing, just making him look like he's a puppy. And the bull is pretty snorty. And Flint, I remember through my head, I remember the thought running through my head. It was like, wow, if I'm ever going to win a world championship, I need to do it before this kid gets his card, before he gets there. And Clem McSpadden said, "Hey, Earl Norton," he said over the microphone, he said something about, "Boy, if he was in this bullfight, I think you'd be second tonight." And yeah, he was right. Frank was just—he was so catty and so handy. So jump to '98. What was really, really special for me that kind of helped, you know, we all have things that we appreciate, and sometimes the stories behind the stories. And I'm one of those guys. I love the story behind the story. And so anyway, for me, when we went in, Frank was number one and I was number two in the world going into the finals in the bullfights. And I mean, you're there, any one of the guys can win the world. But Frank went in first, I was second. I won the first night and I went to first, and Frank was second. And I think each night we flip-flop, first to second, second to first. But and I in the end, I came out on top as everything played out. And to me, it made winning the world even more special because I went head to head with Frank. To me, that was really sweet. I've told him, I've shared it with him, and you know, we've got appreciation for each other, at least I do for him. No, he, you know, and Frank, oh my gosh, he's done a lot, and I am so proud of him, if I can say that, tickled for him, for where he was, what he lost because of life circumstances. And he shifted in his life. He changed things in his life. And I mean, at that time, he was working the NFR. He was in the bullfights, top in the world. He was working the PBR finals, and it all went away.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
It did. And a lot of
Yeah.
guys would give a leg to have that once. And lo and behold, Frank worked his way back.
Yeah.
He
I remember I thought we'd never I remember when he started coming back and I said, "Did you guys hear Frank Newsom's kind of doing some stuff again?" Because we just kind of wrote it off and yeah, and now I can say I just saw Frank a couple weeks ago, and God, he's a great dad, a great husband, a good, you know, he's just a good, he always had a great heart, always.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what he went through and brought himself, you know, you and I have both been around, seen some guys that they get into trouble or get into things like that, and they can try to come back, but
Yeah.
generally you don't see them again. Just that life takes them away. Watch it, then life goes on, other people come along. He has I'm tickled for him, and what a testimony he's got.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. It was quite the time back then. I think about that locker room. I'm so glad I overall by that time in my career got along with all of those guys. The Greg Roemer and Rob Smets and you know, I believe the barrel man Ted Kimsey had to be in the barrel then for
He
the
was.
bullfights. Luckily, thankfully it was not me.
I think there was Ted and Jim Bob were there maybe that year. Ted, he worked more regular bullfights than anybody. And I'd probably say he was probably the best barrel man in the bullfights
Agree.
throughout the history of it. I just hands down.
I would say
Good.
that.
Yeah. And just on, he knew he had an instinct and he'd be there. You'd go to call for him and whoops, he's already here.
Yeah, I
So.
agree. He was fun to watch. And no, listen, I worked, I sometimes people say, you never worked a barrel. I did Wrangler bullfights. I did a few.
Sure.
I didn't love it, but there was an edge that took over when one started, even for me in the barrel, a competitive edge from being an athlete where you want to be in the right place, you want to make that other guy look good. So I always was, it was a toss up for me being in the barrel, whether
Yep.
I wanted to be hit really hard by a big rodeo bull or beat up really quick like that by a Mexican fighting bull. Those, I don't know that there's a lot of people don't understand that Mexican fighting bulls are not bucking bulls traditionally. They
Oh,
are,
no.
they're born mean. Like they're, it's weird.
I've heard it said, and this makes sense, they have been born and bred to fight and kill man for over 200 years. Been bred to fight and kill. I have video, somebody posted it on Facebook. This calf is maybe a day old, 2 days old. It was a Mexican fighting calf. And he's getting up, he's running, and he's smoking. There's two guys in the pen. And he gets up, runs, bunts him, knocks himself down, gets up, turns around, goes after the other guy, hits him, knocks himself down. It's just bred in him. It's and people just don't understand that instinct that's bred in them, and just that they are.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
What about standing? You're 25 feet from a buck and shoot, doing this. They announce your name, and you do this with one of them in the chute. It has to be that competitive edge to not really think. You got to think about what that bull's doing, but you can't think about what his goal is, I would think.
You
That's a
can't think
different
about,
place to go, isn't it?
you can't think about what could happen. Early on, that's generally what a person thinks, before you develop yourself in your career. You can't think about the what ifs or like, boy, if I don't know. Where I turned the corner in my career was where I would just let go. I figured if I don't know it by now, I'm not going to know it. And I just would say a prayer and ask the Lord to guide my feet, and I would allow myself. It was a special place, and I think it the top athletes have to get there of not trying to make things happen, but just letting them happen. And I know I have all the moves. I've done them dozens, hundreds of times. I've got the moves. I got the reactions to every response or every situation that a bull could get me into, and I would just work my way out. A lot of it was mental programming beforehand. I would go find my bull, look what he looked like, looked how at how he moved. And I had done some studying of matadors, and I figured out, I learned a lot that a lot of guys in the States don't ever learn. And it was how to, just looking at a bull, I could tell you if he favors his right or left just by his horns, just by how he uses his head. And just take those subtle things. Maybe he's a little bit light or a little bit sore on one side. Okay, well, I'll use that to my advantage. So I would go and I would just sit down, dark, dark room, or just in my trailer, maybe listening to tunes, but I was so zoned in. The world is like this. For that time, I would focus right here. And I would imagine every possible situation every possible situation that either I could get into or a bull would get me into, and I would practice working it out, working my way out of it over and over, just on a reel. And then when I got in, that was before the rodeo. When the rodeo started, I was the biggest jokester and prankster, and I just liked to have fun, chewing bubble gum and just not focusing, not worrying about it. And then I was able to just let go. And when I did, there's some cool stuff that happened. And it was. And sometimes I wouldn't remember it all until I go back and watch a tape. I'm like, ooh, that was pretty.
Hell, I,
Who's that guy?
I know how that is. I go, people pull something up on YouTube once in a while, even in what I do. I'll go, oh, shit, I forgot about that. You know?
Right.
You, oh,
right.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Wow, that guy's cool.
Yeah. Hey, I was working with him.
Speaking of, not to do a lighthearted segue here, but speaking of, a lot of times you wouldn't remember it, kind of what sparked our conversation, reconnecting us a little bit, is you sent me some stuff and I paid attention in your journey from rodeo, bullfighting. We all know there's injuries. We see certain things. Some people tend to play it off in rodeo, but later in your life, you started to feel like things weren't, you were struggling with some things, right?
Oh, yeah. And before I realized I was struggling with things, I was really struggling. It started out, I was just kind of forgetful. I couldn't concentrate very well, but over, I'd say a couple of years, it just kind of more things would show up to where, you know, my short-term memory was just like, what the heck was it? I just couldn't recall things. I started getting irritable. And I noticed I was, as I look back, I had this slight brain fog all the time and I couldn't shake it. And it's like, I don't know, maybe I need more sleep. Cause I was struggling sleeping. So I've got a CPAP machine now that helps me. It makes a world of difference, but everything, you know, affects your brain, you know, the nutrition, the sleep and all that, but it was more than that. I was into a pretty heavy, deep depression. A lot of people didn't know it. I was pretty good at hiding it, even at work. And I hid it because I was scared. I was scared of getting found out that I wasn't whole, in my opinion. I wasn't whole. I wasn't. Yeah, that's probably just the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And then my irritability was, I'd have times where I would snap with my anger and I'd have an anger outburst or just like, boom, I never saw that coming. I wasn't getting cranky, but then all of a sudden, and that scared the crap out of me. And I knew that if I didn't address it, and I'll be frank with you, I'll be transparent. If I didn't take care of that, I was going to hurt somebody and maybe end up in the big house or in jail. It was to that level. And I really haven't shared that that publicly, but I'm just sharing so that my whole goal is so that people can maybe see themselves in some of this and maybe get some help. So actually I was seeing a mental health counselor for the depression, trying to work on figuring out what's going on. And he had me, he said, open your Bible up and just pick three verses anywhere, whatever it is. And I don't even recall which ones they were. And I read them out loud to him. He said, now, what do you remember? What do you recall that saying? Give me a summary. And I said, no, this and this and this. And he took a breath and he says, you know, most people are going to remember quite a bit more than what you're telling me. So he said, have you ever heard of the Amen Clinic? And like, I didn't know what he's talking about. So I guess to get to the chase and not get too far in the weeds, he said, go to the Amen Clinic or maybe try to get in there and have your brain examined or have a workup and find out, see what they can tell you about if you've had head injuries or those. You know, he knew that I had a lot of concussions over my career and in my lifetime, not just rodeoing. But he said, just see what you find out. And so there, come to learn, the Amen Clinic, there's probably 8 plus in the United States, spread all over the country, more in the metropolitan areas and not around here in rural South Dakota.
Yeah.
But I found them. And the closest one to us, we live in central South Dakota, was in Chicago. And my wife and I were My wife Benita is a nurse, and we talked about it. And it's like, well, yeah, I want to go. She wanted me to go, and so we made arrangements. We went, and they did a full medical history, and then my family medical history, like my siblings, my mom and dad, and also all of my medical history as far as everything, including head injuries. I could write down 20 concussions that were pretty significant over my lifetime. And so they give me a couple of tests. One big one that I remember, and I have the picture, colored picture, that they provided us. It's called a SPECT scan, SPECT, I believe, SPECT scan. And that's where they take a picture of the surface of the brain. They did it under stress, and then another one the next day they did it at rest. So what that showed, well, our brain is normally, we've all probably seen pictures of the brain, the surface of the brain, and yeah, it's kind of wavy and whatnot is what it's supposed to look like. And my brain at that time anyway, it showed that it was kind of looking down at a top of a canyon or a rocky ridge. It was damaging. They told me there was damage in all four lobes of my brain. And yeah, I still get emotional about it.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll let you take a breath.
Thank you.
I'll backtrack. Yeah. I'll backtrack a little bit when you said, I could name 20 concussions I had.
Yep. Well,
how can you tell? Like, I don't know if I've had a concussion, but I'm probably somewhere. But what is, when you say I could name 20, is it, you know, football players talk about it. Well, we used to call it getting our bell rung. I'd see stars, different levels of concussions. What makes you realize those 20 or whatever? What stands out about those?
Either I was knocked out cold. Either I was stunned and it took me a little while to shake it off. Mm-hmm. Or I lost consciousness even for a split second. I remember one where I landed on my, couple times where I landed on my head. People said I was motionless like for a split second. And then it's like I popped up and I just went back at it. Yeah, my bell was rung at those times. Most of them were pretty hard hits, like either knocked out or dazed pretty good. I've come to learn since that anytime you get your bell rung, you get dazed, you see stars, mm-hmm. just for a little bit. That is a light grade concussion. From what I understand in talking to some doctors that are in the field. But the 20 that I know of, I could almost write the date down. If I had to, I could go find it, but there's 20 of them that I listed. And that shocked me when I sat and listed them out. And there's countless times when I got dazed. I mean, you get hooked by a bull. It's pretty hard, pretty violent, and it comes with the territory. It's, okay, so let's, it just comes with territory, and you don't think twice of it. So it could easily happen. I mean, we get jarred around, bull riders, you know, people in life, period, whether you're yeah. bronc riders.
Or riding your bike, jumping on a trampoline. I mean, there's times in your yeah. life it happens. Yeah. 20,
right.
20 is a lot. In case they didn't tell you, that's quite a few.
So, yeah. I had one doctor tell me, he's like, sat there and slack jawed. And he's like, 20. Like he said, I had one patient with 5 or 6 and that was a lot. He said, I've never heard of somebody having, like, well, doc, sorry, here I am.
Yeah. Well, I believe every professional football player is until they completely come clean. I think they all lie about how many times. So they examine your brain. It looks more like a rocky ridge, which I knew that about your head anyway. It's more. So then what? they do this and then.
So, well, so when they were saying this, let me bring you into what my brain, what I was thinking of at the moment was he's showing us this, my wife and I, and he's pointing to the different regions. And he said, and he kind of plays a game with himself. He will get the results of the exam before he reads any of the file, all the reported stuff, self-reported and whatnot. And he'll look at it and he'll go, oh, this person probably is dealing with this and this and this and this. And then he'll open up and read the record. And he's like, the guy's that sharp and knows the brain that well. And he pointed out, says, well, this is, you probably deal with anxiety. You probably deal with depression. You probably deal with short-term memory loss. I'm like, this is legit. He knows what he's talking about. So when he's showing me that, that was showing us that and hearing it. And then also there was another part of the scan where they shoot some dye in my bloodstream and then they scan it again and it shows where the blood is flowing and how well it's flowing within the brain. And there was areas that were like glowing like Christmas, red hot, and there was areas that were kind of dim. And he said, those are areas of injury. And there's lower blood flow at this area, that area. So in that moment, you know, I had spent some time over time reading about former football players or whoever that have had CTE, have been diagnosed with CTE, which is only diagnosable after death by looking at the brain, slices of the brain. And my worst fears were coming true. They were pointing it out to me.
Yeah.
And these guys that I can remember, you remember Mike Webster used to be the center for the Steelers for the winning years.
I'll tell you why I remember it so well, because he was a center.
Yep.
And they talked about his position every single play. He hit his head. He hit, yes. Right?
Every play. They found that he had CTE, but what I know about those people that have had CTE, the last years of their life are horrible. They have dementia or they have struggles with their mind, whatever, various forms. And I remember reading a story, I think it was in Sports Illustrated, that he spent the last year, a period of time towards the end of his life living in his pickup and was pulling his teeth out with the pliers. He just wasn't with it anymore.
Yeah.
And in that flash instant, I saw possibly something like that's my future, and scared me to death. So, but the cool thing is the doc says, but we can heal the brain. I'm like, my wife is a nurse and we look at each other and she's like, she'd never heard of that. And well, what are you talking about? So he said these different things that we can do. One is reduce sugar as much as possible, because that it feeds inflammation in all of us. And he said several other things, but reduce sugar. He said there's get good sleep, get exercise regularly. Excuse me, is that helps the brain a lot. Get good sleep. And the big one was we recommend 40 hyperbaric oxygen treatments. I'd only maybe heard of it, but I'm like, I can do the others. It's in my head. It's
right,
all real
right, quick. Right. Yeah, come on. It's like, oh, come on, really? Hyperbaric chambers. Yeah. Okay. Probably going here.
Yeah,
tell us what a hyperbaric chamber is.
A hyperbaric chamber is literally a chamber, most often like a tube. There are soft-sided and hard-sided. What they recommended for me is to do the hard-sided because they're more effective. And in the hard-sided also is they can get it to 100% pure oxygen in that environment. So for anybody that's been in an MRI exam, MRI tube, that's kind of claustrophobic. This is like four times as big as a MRI tube. So actually I could sit up in it and I put my hand on top of my head and I'd still would just barely touch the top. It's three quarters
It's a clear acrylic, big tube. I could see through it, meaning that's what I mean by the clear acrylic. And they would raise the pressure, like right now, you and I, wherever we're at, we're feeling the atmosphere pressure of 1. Well, in there, they take it up to 2 to treat the brain. I thought, oh my gosh, in there, am I going to be able to breathe very deep? So my first session in there, I'm really heightened awareness of like, if I can breathe fully or not. I was like, oh yeah. The only thing I felt any of the times that I was in there was that my ears would pop when the pressure would increase or decrease, just like keep popping the ears. That was it. Or drink a water bottle or water out of a bottle. You're in that for, they recommended a pressure of 2, which is 2 of what we feel right now, really is nothing, and 100% oxygen. Guess how much oxygen is in the atmosphere that you and I are in all the time? Take a shot.
I used to know. Do we know that, Logan? How much? 34%.
Nope.
I knew I would be wrong.
It's right around 21%.
Okay, I wasn't real far. Yeah.
No, you weren't far out.
It's been a while since physical science when I was a freshman. Yeah.
I was shocked to learn that.
Yeah.
But okay. That makes sense. So I had done the other things, and then finally I did the other things that they had recommended. I'm going to slide backwards a little bit. That they had recommended at the Amen Clinic of what to do to help myself to recover or deal with it. And they, you know, it helped, but it wasn't enough. I still had all of it going on, maybe slightly less. So we went searching for a clinic that would treat me for post-concussion syndrome. And we found one. The one we found was 7 hours away. And I'll tell you why after a bit, why every hospital has one. Maybe I'll just tell you now. Every hospital that has a burn unit or a wound unit has a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. But because the FDA highly regulates those and what you can use them for, I speculate roughly 10 different things, like some things with stroke, like if somebody has a diabetic ulcer, a diabetic limb that just, it won't heal on their feet or legs or something, they can use it for that. Like if you freeze your feet or something like that, hypothermia, they can treat that because it's like a burn victims. It just puts the body in a environment that it helps it to heal itself much quicker.
Wait, so what you're telling me is the FDA is making decisions that don't necessarily completely look out for the well-being of the patient? That's weird.
I might have implied that. You're not going to put me into that one.
No, I'm not saying it.
Yeah. And that's any of them that are connected to a hospital, and hospitals have to adhere to the FDA regulations. So we found one by the stroke of God. And there's more to this story, but it's just amazing how he works. But we found one. The closest one was in Fargo, North Dakota. Called him up. Yep, we can do that, etc. So we made plans to go up there. It's 7 hours from us. So Benita took a leave from work. I work at a school. So it was summertime. So we went up there last summer, lived in a camper, which is kind of like old times for me. Yeah, right. In the rodeo days. And I got the treatments up there. And about 15 treatments in, and I've shared my story, and that might be where you've come across it. About 15 treatments in, and see, as I look back and understand about this, they said you have impatience. You don't really perceive things as well as you normally, you get impatient. So about 15 treatments in, there's a doctor that has to be there all the time when there's these hard-sided chambers with that high level of oxygen. It's just regulations, and it's good for safety. I called the doctor over, and I said, Doc, I'm not feeling a thing. And I'm supposed to do 40 of these, and we're living in a camper away from home. It's my wife's taking some leave, and I don't know if I'm gonna do this much longer because it's not working. And I was pretty adamant. And he said, "Well, you have to realize what's going on." And I'm a realist, and I'm guarded on what I'm gonna believe, right? I'm not gonna believe just anything. So he says, "What's really so like when somebody sets me up, it's like, oh, you need to hear, you need to know." I'm like, "Well, brace yourself, because I don't know if it's that's just the way I am." So he said, "What's going on when you're in this environment is you're putting yourself, your body is an environment, an environment that allows for some things to happen that don't happen anywhere else. When you're in this high, 100% oxygen, raised atmosphere, environment, if you will, inside that chamber, it is allowing your body to do neurogenesis and angiogenesis. My wife would be proud of me. She's being a nurse. I can never remember those two. But neurogenesis is where your body is creating or growing new nerve tissue. And angiogenesis is where you're creating new venous tissue. That, believe me, I didn't understand all that at first. So what he's, I said, I looked at him, "Doc, what are you talking about?" He said, "So in what you're creating is new nerve tissue and new venous tissue. In other words, you're creating new, basically brain matter, and new, you're creating new blood vessels." I'm like, "Oh, really?" Because right then I remember looking at the brain scan, and there's damage and there's not good blood flow. And I'm like, "Okay, now you have my attention." So I'm still spectacle or suspicious.
Skeptical.
That's
Skeptical.
it.
There you go.
I sound like Liesl here.
Spectacle, testicle, skeptical. Yeah, I got you.
Be more Pacific.
But yeah, I depreciate your being genuous here, transparent. Yeah.
You understand.
I get it.
Oh man. So I was skeptical. I'm like, "Well, okay." I said, "I'll try some more." So it was about 24 treatments in. I kind of wish I would have journaled. I've never been very good at that. But I was about 24 treatments in, and I was kind of like, "Hey, I think something's going on." But at the same time, I'm like, "Am I looking for something? Am I creating like imagination of like, is there something that I'm, am I really feeling something, or is this just me trying, wanting it so bad?" So I sat on it. I didn't say anything. And after about, 27, 28, 29 treatments in, and they were 1 hour long treatments.
One a day, just one a day.
Initially, it was one a day. And then I realized that you can do two a day.
Oh.
You can do up to two a day. Otherwise, you get too much oxygen in your system. But infuses, literally infuses into your cells, oxygen. So it oxygenates your cells. Blah, blah. So about 28, 29, was talking with Benita, and I said, I think I'm feeling something. I don't know what it is, but I can tell there's something." Because it was just gradual and a little more. I'm like, I felt more alert. I felt happier. I felt like intuitive. I could just sense I was more intuitive, and I was just more, a little more chill. And what do you think she said?
Thank God.
I'm sure she was inside.
Yeah.
But she says, "Yeah, I know."
Oh, she's, yeah, that meant, oh, I know. Yeah,
You
probably. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
know, and you didn't tell me what, why? She said, "I didn't want to give you false hope. I could see this, but something, but I didn't want to give you false hope and make you, I wanted you to see it and experience it, see if you would recognize it." I said, "Well, what do you see?" She said, "You're just more flexible." I thought, well, that's an interesting word.
You're in a, wait, how about she should have said, "You're not such an asshole." Is that what
yeah, they said that? It might have been. Yeah. It might have been it.
Yeah.
She's just a kind soul. Yeah, she said, just like in, I'm just more easygoing, more flexible in discussing things and not so rigid. So, yeah, I was probably less of a butthead. But, dude, Flynn, I'm telling you, I was a butthead. I didn't have patience. I didn't have tolerance. I was angry all the time. I was depressed. I was just disengaging in life. So I suppose I was coming back to life to her. And I was in contact with one of my brothers quite a bit on the phone over this whole thing last summer. And I said, "Hey, guess what? I could tell, I could feel something." What do you think he said?
"Yeah, I know."
Yeah. He said, "I know."
Yeah.
"How can you tell over the phone?" First thing I said, and he said, "Well, before you, I could tell when you were talking, you talked slower. And I could tell as you were talking, you were compiling the words for your sentence. You were finding them and putting the words into your sentence and you, as you were saying it." He said, "Now you just talk." I'm like, "Really?" So those things that Benita told me and my brother told me, I had no clue that was happening or that I was that way. So, man, at this time, I'm, let's go, Doc. I'm all in. No
yeah.
more skepticism. Well, I'm ready. So, I mean, and it just got better and better as time went on. It was none of the, "Oh, yeah, I can tell." You know, you get out an hour later, it's like, "Man, I feel so much better." It wasn't that. It was gradual, which by the time I was in the high 30s, I was like, "Wow, this is really cool." Really. And so it was like my eyes were being opened up. It was kind of like my mind was being opened up a little bit. I was just, there was a newness, a freshness that was just, it's hard to describe. And so I haven't shared this a lot, but when I got done with the 40 full 40 treatments, as I was there, I got to know the staff and they were really, really good. And if they'd answer questions, the doc would answer questions. And I was dealing with, I broke my neck at really early in my career. And it was always there, never something debilitating. But then right about the end of my rodeo career, it was getting pretty sore, pretty bad, tingling numbness down my arms and hands and stuff. So anyway, I had my neck fused. And that was in like 2012, and this was in 2022. Man, I was in a lot of pain. Pain scale 1 to 10, 10 being excruciating. I was probably an average daily level of 8. Eight plus, give or take. And that alone makes you grouchy and a bear. And an asshole.
Depressed. Depressed. Pain is depressing. Yeah. And an asshole. Yeah.
As some would say.
Yeah.
So I was telling them, they would always ask me, "How is your pain? How is your pain?" Well, every time I would go in, they would always like take your blood pressure and just, it was a routine of like, "How are you feeling today? Are you feel any sharper or whatever? How is your pain level?" And finally, I got to know him pretty well. I'm like, "Why do you keep asking me about my pain level? Because this is for my brain." And they said, "Well, it's been known to help with pain because it'll heal tissue and sometimes bone." I'm like, so obviously they had my attention. And this is something that it's amazing that it's not more readily used and the FDA stands in the way. Okay. In my opinion, you can quote me. remember I said it oxygenates the cells. It helps the body to heal, the tissue to heal. So to cut to the chase, Flint, it will help heal most things that you have going on physically, as far as pain. I had a surgeon in December of 2022
Did an MRI. He came in, said, "Yep, see this, see this. This is what's going on. You're losing space in your disc space, and this is causing what you got going on." Well, and he was literally ready. He turned around and was ready to schedule surgery for the next week. I tapped the brakes here. I had just a couple months before had gone to the Amen Clinic. They told me all this about my brain. I'm like, I want to address this stuff before my neck pain. I want to address the pain, but this brain is more important. So after the 40 treatments, I did another 8 treatments at a deeper pressure for 2 hours in length. And if I didn't experience it, I'm not kidding you. I would tell whoever was telling me that they had the success that I had, I'd call them a liar. I said, there's no way. After about 4 treatments, it went down about a notch and a half from 8 down to like 6-ish. And after each treatment, it went back down. And by after treatment 7, I had no pain. I mean, this is in a week. And I've been dealing with this for 9 months to 12 months. Incredible pain. But my point is that why I'm sharing it is this is out there. All this is out there for the brain, for the body. Flint, if I knew about this when I was rodeoing, I would have moved to live by a clinic like that. You get an injury, there are treatments. Let me slow down. Remember I said it was really a God-led thing of me finding this place in Fargo, Benita and I finding this place. The doctor that oversees this whole clinic, as well as she has one in Chicago, it's Daphne Denham. And I've looked up, she is the leading clinician in the world to treating concussions or brain injuries with hyperbarics in the world. And to me, that I was pretty tickled, but I found out about that way after the fact. But when I went up there, I learned more about the brain. I learned about what the hyperbarics can do for the brain. So I grew new blood vessels, new neural pathways, new abilities to grow, learn in my brain. And then also there's like, I found some major relief in my pain. I walked out of there with no pain when all the treatments were done. So right before I left, I said, Doc, am I going to have to come back and get more treatments to maintain this? He said, yeah, you will with your neck. He said, every 5-6 months, you probably want to come back for a couple of treatments. I'm like, okay. So, and I had just in my head, I'm like, okay, I know this answer, but well, what about my brain? What about that? I got to come back and do that treatment too. And he smiled and he says, no. I'm like, what are you talking about? I do for the, he said, remember I told you were growing new tissue?
Yeah.
Holy.
Makes sense. Instead of a treatment with medication that gives you relief for a while, you got to come back. Cause there's a lot of that with other ailments.
Big pharma.
Yeah. And
I'll just say it. Big pharma.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, I'll tell you that I don't think I told you this when I reached out to you, but my youngest daughter, Paige, works. It started as an internship and she's working there now. Now, don't get me wrong. She's not a doctor. She graduated in psychology. She works at the McGovern Brain Institute at MIT.
Really?
So I'm talking to her after you and I talked and scheduled this. I said, Paige, yeah. I'm doing a podcast with my friend, Jerry Norton, talking about concussions. And I said, and we'll get to this in a minute. I said, you know, I was very outspoken at the NFR when bull rider Kai Hamilton came back 12 hours after being unconscious and everybody, we'll get to that. I said, he's doing some stuff in hyperbaric chambers. Well, Paige reads brain scan, helps people get brain scans. So she hears a lot. She said, oh, the hyperbaric chambers. She said, do you know that they can actually see the healing of the brain in a brain scan after hyperbaric chambers? Drea. So she knew.
Chills,
she works at MIT. She's in a lab and hears that. And She said, yeah, not enough doctors. Now, you just said this. They don't, for one, talk about one thing that you can do in proper nourishment for the brain, what to eat and what not to eat. And the hyperbaric chamber thing is being talked about because it truly grows tissue and heals. There you go. So isn't that funny? Not funny, ha-ha, but she, you know.
Well, that affirms what I'm talking about. It's not that I'm talking about it, but it affirms that heals, that it's available and it's out there, and more people are learning about it.
You know,
go ahead. I've talked with doctors, and I was saying, why isn't this more readily used or available? And the two doctors I talked to, they said, this isn't talked about in medical school. They don't talk about hyperbarics. Not at all. We didn't cover a day of it. I'm like, that's just weird. In my opinion, I have an opinion state it this way. It makes sense that a certain group or entity would prescribe medication to millions of people because they have to keep coming back and paying for medication to maintain help or treatment, and they're never cured. But if somebody's cured, they're not, that expense is going to go away, and who's ever supplying them loses out.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
No, don't quote me on that. You're not the Lone Ranger on that.
Well, but I don't need them to, I don't need anybody coming back and give me a hard time.
Well, if you,
not personally, but there's powerful and there's a lot of money behind it.
Yeah. But you know how you feel, you know, now that your conversations are constructed better, you know, that what you're feeling, depression. If I'll tell you this, I'll do it if it'll make my hair go thick. Like, you got great hair, so apparently it works there too.
You do, when you do it, Flint, when you do it, you're gonna have to put some cow crap on your head, wear it in there, and take pictures. Send me pictures.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, one thing that, you know, the people that listen to these. And I was on my show in Vegas on stage, on my podcast. I do a Tuesday night live. I was outspoken. We tend to, in the rodeo business, I'd say football and rodeo, there's now football, they're very aware of it, of concussions and the symptoms. There's a doctor watching a game that radios down and goes, take that guy out and test him. Yeah. You know, we have a guy, world champion bull. Yeah. We have the world champion bull rider, and this is not his fault, not a slight on him. Hamilton gets knocked out cold in the arena on a Tuesday night. It's the day they have the Wednesday morning performance to make up for the canceled one because of the shooting. He goes to the hospital, checks himself out, rides the next morning, wins two rounds in a row. Great job, great accomplishment. Is made, you know what it's called? It's cowboy shit right there. That's not being a pussy, you know.
But he said, I'm not a pussy.
So what? Yeah. And in a sense, it's sending a message to all these young kids going, see that? I get knocked out. Now, listen, I understand the cowboy world. I've grown up in it. I said the next day, he won two rounds in a row after being knocked cold. He's good right now. I want to know that he's good when he's 45.
Right.
I thought took a step back in taking the power from the doctor that said he's getting a concussion test. If he doesn't pass, he can't ride. The doctor didn't have that power. So
why?
Who knows?
That's nuts. Sorry. I interrupted you. But just blows my mind. That blows my mind that they okay. You're stirring something
you,
up here.
Well, you went through it. You know that it's good here, but what about here? What are we doing? You know, hey, there's nobody that doesn't look 20 years down the road like cowboys. Let's admit it. You know, it's just the way, it's the way we do things, you know?
Right. It just is. It is. Nobody's looking down the road. the side effects or whatever, that we're here, we're now. It's, if we don't do well now, we're not making money. And you don't want to be a pussy. I was there. Yeah. It's just what you do.
Yeah.
But as I was saying, it was a hand of God was involved that I went to Fargo and learned what I did and was exposed to this doctor, Dr. Denham. She's a really huge researcher, and they treat people with concussions constantly. There's a couple of colleges and high schools all around there, and anybody with concussions, plus the regular hyperbaric treatment stuff. In their tests, in their research, thousands of people have gotten treatment for a concussion within 10 days of being concussed. And their research thus far, it's not published, but thus far, that the average number of treatments to somebody that's been concussed until they're back to normal where they were before is 3.8 treatments. 3.8 1-hour treatments.
So you're talking short term right after you get a concussion. You're not talking, it's right away.
Yes, for the symptoms to be gone, for the person to feel real solid, like, yeah, I feel good. The thing that comes along with concussions, and the research has shown this as well, is that someone who is concussed cannot self-diagnose.
Right.
You can't for sure say, yeah, I do or don't have a concussion. A lot of times you don't realize you got a concussion. How many times have we had friends that are just like baddie, keep asking the same question over and over and over and over because they're concussed and they have no clue.
Yeah.
But they're off they go. I'm not against anybody competing in rodeo or any sport. More power to you. My big thing, I just have a passion for getting the word out there.
Yeah.
And letting people know that there's damage that happens to your brain when you receive a concussion, big or small. It's still, I've seen it in my own head that there's damage, but that can be helped. It can be, you can be, I believe that you can be healed in all of my understanding. I have not gotten another spec scan. I would like to do that, but it's pretty spendy. I'm just incredibly thankful. My wife is incredibly thankful for where I'm at and that it's out there. And you and I have known people that have, well, I'll just say it, they've taken their own life because concussions are pretty likely a source of what their struggles were in their depression. And doggone it, it doesn't have to happen.
Yeah.
And I want it out there that people, I want people to know. And Flint, I just got off the phone. My wife and I were talking with a lady. I guess what really has motivated me, and I didn't talk to you about this before, I didn't have permission to share this. It's not my story, but she gave me permission to share this. Last month, first of all, I got off the phone with Melissa Kirby, or sorry, Melissa Burney, Kirby Burney's widow. Just at a month ago, Kirby passed away. And his diagnosis, and she gave me permission to share this, and she wants what occurred with him to be known. She's given me permission to share this. And I don't do it lightly, but his condition was from concussions. Mm. Doctor neurologist has labeled it a couple of years ago that he had CTE, not dementia, not Alzheimer's, but CTE. And that's the other end of it. His last 7 years of his life, he struggled. He struggled. She took him to Joe Namath's clinic in Florida that treats with hyperbaric therapy, hyperbaric oxygen. And it helped him to an extent. And she, I quote, she said, it was too late for him. It had progressed so far that it was too late for him. But she's thankful that they had another couple of years.
Hmm. Yeah.
Dude, that I knew Kirby, not well, but I knew Kirby. And it just breaks my heart to that happened. And it maybe just part of it, honestly, it scares the crap out of me that it could still be me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I'm healed, but I dang sure know I'm a lot better right now. And maybe I am healed. I don't know. But yeah. I have a better life than I did 9 months ago. I'm happier. I'm not hurting myself or someone else. I'm not putting myself under the ground. I don't know how to express this anymore.
You're done. Well, it's funny as you were saying that, I thought of my friend Ty Pazabon from Canada, you know, same thing. And I know somebody from his family was pretty outspoken during the NFR as well. Again, we're not discouraging people from competing to, it's, you know, so tell us to kind of wrap it up. What are you doing now? What do you do for work? I think it's cool what you're doing. Here you are, civilian life, former world champion bullfighter. What are you doing now, Jer?
I am a K-12 school counselor. I enjoy it. I enjoy helping kids. I enjoy investing in their lives. Elementary, I go in there once a week, spend some time in each classroom and help them with life skills, do a lesson on life skills. Middle school, it's the same. I get a little more direct and real with life. I think probably more than most counselors will. But a lot of them need to be exposed and understand that. I do it respectfully. And however, and then in the high school, I do that, a little of that, but I also help them kind of figure out what kind of career they want to get into, and then find classes and enroll them in the classes that they want to take, find dual credit classes that they can take that count in high school and college, and even find the schools they want to go to attend school. And I also, on a part-time job, is I'm a mental health therapist locally. And that's rewarding too.
Yeah. It's interesting that you've taken your struggles now. That's why I wanted to be sure and let people know what you're doing now, because all of it is contributing to make it, in a way, from little kids to high school kids to the other people independently, you're helping, you're in a way making sure they're okay, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So,
yeah,
you're right. I think about that a little bit, and I think about the contrast to when I was fighting bulls and facing these animals that want to knock the tar out of you and don't care.
They don't care.
You know, people would always say, well, does it hurt when the horn, or would you rather have them hit you with the head or the horn? I'm like, here's the analogy that I haven't heard a lot of people get, but I share. Look at a bull. And look at the size of their neck. A man cannot reach around and touch his hands going around the neck of a bull. Now, think of your bicep that big. That's the power they have. That's the power they have.
Mine's close. So, I'm close.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
It's got to be TV. It's got to be the video. Yeah. No, but I think about the contrast between... People said, you're nuts, you're crazy. It's, why would you do that? And then now I've got a degree in psychology, sociology, and I'm working in mental health, helping people. They said I needed the help. But I think, you know what? I look at it, and I'm somebody that likes to help people and be there for people. And that's part of what all this is, too.
Yeah,
sharing the story.
Well, it's a good one. And when I read your stuff, I wanted to, you know, say, I thought the timing was good. And I've just seen a lot of guys come around. I've been in it a while, and I think it's interesting. And we'll, you know, keep me updated. And sure. I'm gonna spread the word, too, because I think it's legit. Yeah. I think we have some guys that could benefit. So, listen, Jared, great story, man. And
Thank you. It's not one I wanted.
Nope.
But it's one I'll tell.
Yeah. All the best. Hey. Tell your family hello. And
I will. Likewise. Stay salty. Hey. And I'll tell you what. I've been looking. I don't get up to the camera a little bit. Open your mouth. I don't see any Invisalign.
No, I'm all good.
You don't look pale. You look healthy.
Thank you.
I've been doing my homework.
You have been keeping up with things. I hope I'm not pale. thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Man,
take care.
It's been fun. I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate you sharing all about the rodeo life and bull riding. And you have one of the coolest jobs in the world. You have had and you continue to.
Thanks.
So if I can ever tag along in your pocket, you give me a holler.
You got it, man.